Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
When people awoke on the 16th of August to hear reports that Tom Hall had been arrested, the initial reaction seemed to have been just complete disbelief.
Welcome to Crimes NZ. I'm Jesse Mulligan, and in this episode we're going further back than we ever have before, back to 1886, and one of the most sensational crimes of the 19th century, the bustling town of Timaru. And much of New Zealand was stunned when society darling Thomas Hall was arrested for the attempted murder of his wife Kitty. That was just the beginning. Author Peter Graham joins us to outline those shocking events of 1886.
He was called the vilest criminal in New Zealand history. Another phrase that was used about him is that he had been convicted of the most inhuman and detestable crimes one has ever read or heard about. That gave me a real interest in finding out just what it was and why it was why it stood out in this way. And I managed to find a printed copy of the evidence of this trial, of two trials actually, and every word of evidence has been recorded and was available. And I started to read it, and I realised that this had to be turned into a book. And I was also, I suppose, moved by the fact that it was the sheer amount of detail about life that was going on in this little place, Timaru, in the 1880s. It was a remarkable window into this time and place, this little town which, as one observer put it, had become a hotbed of snobbery and social competition, which we would not really expect from a place that 30 years later it had been no more than a wool shed and a couple of shacks on a beach. And it had come all this way in 30 years.
Let's begin at the beginning then, Peter. Who was Thomas Hall, or Tom Hall as he went by?
Well, I call him Tom Hall, as if he was a friend of mine, but everyone else seemed to call him Tom Hall. But yes, it is. It was called by Sir Francis Adams, one of our most knowledgeable criminal lawyers in New Zealand, the greatest criminal cause celeb in New Zealand history. So, who is Tom Hall? Well, Tom Hall was a well-known figure in Timaru. He was a nephew of Sir John Hall, who had been Colonial Secretary of New Zealand, and only a few years before had been the Premier, which was the Prime Minister that was so described at that time. His uncle had been the Prime Minister. His father, another Tom Hall, was a very prominent figure in Timaru civic life. Tom was, to all appearances, a successful businessman. He was handsome and charming, a good dancer, had a fine voice that was much in demand at musical soirees, which were a popular entertainment at the time. He rode beautifully, and he and his wife Kitty were leading lights of the South Canterbury Harriers, the local hunt club, and he was regarded as extremely charming to women, and was in great demand until not long before he was arrested. He had married Kitty Kane, who was the stepdaughter of Captain Henry Kane, who was one of the real founding figures of Timaru. And when people first heard of, there were a population about 3,000 at that time, Timaru, just to give that feel. It was a small town. And when people awoke on the 16th of August to hear reports that Tom Hall had been arrested with an accomplice called Meg Houston for the attempted murder of Kitty by poisoning, the initial reaction seemed to have been just complete disbelief.
Yeah, and if we look at a motive, where the motive begins, it's probably useful to ask what line of work Tom was in.
Yes, absolutely. Tom had set himself up in business, and he was generally described as a land broker and commission agent. He established a firm called Hall and Meeson in 1882. They operated as land brokers, commission agents. They arranged insurance for people and land sales. And if you had any funds for investment, Tom was your man. He was intelligent, it seems, reasonably intelligent. He attended Christ's College, where he, for a few years, where he won prizes for history and mathematics. And no doubt he thought that with his charm and natural ability and family connections, he could not fail to do well in business. But it didn't really work out that way. By 1883, South Canterbury was sinking into deep depression. For example, his father, who had several runs in the Mackenzie country, was forced to sell and to sell the large and imposing house that he had built in Timaru. So he had run out of money. And Tom, in 1883, as everything seemed to be going downhill, that was the time when he started to inject himself with regular heavy doses of morphine in modern terminology. He suffered from asthma and severe sciatica, so it's possible that he might have thought that he was this was a way of treating those things. Anyway, getting to 1884, Hall and Mason's accounts were in a complete mess. Tom had been stealing money from clients, and he had committed numerous forgeries. And the typical forgery was a promissory note. And the first one was a promissory note for £800 in the name of Edward Cameron, repayable in 6 months. So this note is forged. No money was lent to Edmund Cameron. And Tom then takes the forged note to the bank, who discount it. They pay immediate cash to Hall of, say, £650 on the 800, and that would have to be repaid in 6 months. So anyway, by 1884, the total of Hall's defalcations ran to about £6,000, and unless he could raise a large sum of money, he would be exposed as a forger and a thief, and a long prison sentence would be necessary. So Tom had to come up with a plan, which he did.
He was regarded as pretty good at what he did, right? No one suspected him.
I think he was. I don't think anybody... he kept up a front. He managed to roll money around, as people do, so he always seemed to have some money. But I don't think anybody, except possibly the manager of the Bank of New South Wales, had any idea that Tom Hall was in financial trouble. His plan was diabolical, really. He decided he would marry Kitty Kane, have a child by her, and then kill her. Kitty was a woman who was 24 or 25. At that time, she may have felt that she was a little bit on the shelf. She was described as nice-looking rather than beautiful. on the plump side, easygoing, pleasant, giggly, and a bit naive, not to be too unkind about it. She didn't worry much about her clothes or appearance, and Tom decided that he would honour her with marriage. And as I've said, she was one of two stepdaughters of Captain Henry Kane, a man who had, after being the first storekeeper to arrive in Timaru, had gone on to really make himself a fortune, and most of that money had gone into two trust funds, of which Kitty was going to be a major beneficiary.
Uh-huh. Tom might have had his eye on that trust fund.
Tom definitely knew about it and was exceedingly interested, and I'll tell you a little bit about that in a moment. This trust owned a lot of land that was ripe for redevelopment, for housing on the expanding fringes of Timaru. But he needed cash in a hurry, and he decided he could deal with that by insuring her life for, as it happened, £6,000, two policies totalling £6,000. Just to be sure of everything, before he got married, he went and got some legal advice from a solicitor in Christchurch, not using one of the local lawyers, probably not wanting it to be known what he was doing. Anyway, he went to see a man called Thomas Joynt, and three things emerged in answer to some hypothetical questions involving people who were not named. One, Captain Kane would have to die before Kitty, or she would not inherit anything that he still had in his own name and was part of his estate. Two, if Kitty were to die without having a child, her interest in the trusts would pass to her sister Ellis. Three, if Kitty were to die having had a child, her interest would automatically go to the child, and Tom, as the surviving parent, would control and in reality have the use of Kitty's share until the child came of age. So he'd actually have his hands on the trust money for 21 years, which would suit him very nicely. So that was the plan, and it was a dreadful plan. And in pursuance of that plan, Tom and Kitty were married on the 26th of May, 1885. Captain Kane didn't much like what was going on, and he made a point of being away in Dunedin at the time of the wedding. They later made it up. He didn't like the excessive interest Tom was taking in Kitty's trusts, and in fact those trusts were being much mismanaged. But anyway, before the marriage, 3 weeks before, Tom bought from a local chemist 120 grains of tartar emetic. Now, this is a poison. It was a poison that could be purchased. It's a poison that, in crystal form, incorporates the metallic element antimony, mm-hmm. and it was in crystals, and it was soluble with water, and 3 or 4 grains were enough to kill an adult. It was quite a hard poison to administer in some ways, but because if you had too much, you would vomit it up, and if you put it with food, you could vomit it up, and so on. But that was the poison Tom decided to use. And just before the marriage, he borrowed from a bookshop a book called Headland's Action of Medicines to study the subject of antimony. And a few weeks later, he bought a large volume called Taylor on Poisons, which he used to read constantly, actually. He was very fascinated.
No alarm bells in Timaru at this stage?
Well, not absolutely.
120 grains of tartar emetic and 2 books on poisoning people?
Not at all. Not at all. Not at all. And he told the chemist that he wanted to use the tartar emetic to mix with tobacco and make himself some cigarettes that were going to be used for relieving his asthma. But that must have been something that was done at the time, because the chemist didn't seem to think it was at all odd, and actually made some suggestions about how he could make them more effectively. This tartar emetic did have some medical uses, but none of them really, if we reject the idea that he was going to use them to make his cigarettes, it's quite clear they were bought as part of his plan to murder Kitty. By mid-October 1885, Kitty was expecting a child. And then, as we have seen, Captain Kane had to die. From the end of November, Tom became a regular visitor to Captain Kane. He used to go and see him every morning and every afternoon.
Sudden interest in the health of his father-in-law, hey?
A great interest in the health of his father-in-law. The father-in-law had all sorts of health problems: heart disease, congestion of the kidneys, senile gangrene, and he was pretty much bedridden at that time. And he lay in bed, he drank, he was prescribed by his doctor 2 quarts of champagne a day, and some additional champagne was often required at night, apparently, and that was in addition to whatever whiskey or rum or brandy he would also drink. So he just seemed to lie in bed all day drinking, really, in point of fact. Now, at that time, a nurse, whose name was Miss Margaret Graham Houston, a very nice, ladylike Scottish girl, as she was described, was engaged to look after the captain. She is the person who was later arrested with Tom as Tom's accomplice. From the time Tom was in regular contact with the captain, he had mysterious vomiting fits all the time. And it seems that it must have been because of poison that was being given to him at that time. Every time his drink no longer agreed with him. I don't think it stopped him drinking, but if ever he had a glass of whiskey or something, he found it made him vomit. And quite clearly the suspicion is that Tom was putting something...
Well, didn't Kane actually say that he thought Tom was tinkering with his whiskey?
He didn't seem to pursue that as a serious suggestion because, you know, he continued to be on friendly terms with Tom. So he was a funny...
He thought the whiskey was problematic, but he didn't quite connect it
he
to
didn't
the guy
quite connect it with yeah. Tom, I think. That's how you could put
and
it.
And so back to Kitty, his new wife. He's also sitting with her,
yes.
And he's poisoning her at the same time too.
Well, I think he... No. He was waiting for the child to be born. And the son, whose name was Nigel, was born on the 19th of June, 1886. So that was a few months after Captain Kane died. Captain Kane died in January 1886. And then the child is born, and at that time an elderly nurse called Mrs. Ellison, who features in the drama to come, was engaged to look after both Kitty and the new baby. And the nurse, Margaret Graham Houston, stayed on as Kitty's lady help, she was called. I don't know if you know what that is. A lady help is someone who's an employee, but not sort of so more at the social level of the employer, perhaps, is one way of putting it. Mm-hmm. A superior kind of servant, I suppose. I think there was often quite a bit of friction between people like the lady help and the
There might have been friction, in particular in this household, because it sounded like Tom and Margaret might have had something going on as well.
That is the way it looked to many. But only days after the baby's birth, the birth of little Nigel, Kitty began to experience vomiting attacks. Actually, another thing, I think a day before the child was born, Tom went back to the chemist's and bought another 120 grains of tartar emetic And it is clear that at that time, Tom was poisoning Kitty. So she had these vomiting attacks that went on for weeks. Now we get really to the heart of the drama. She had day and night of vomiting. She got worse and worse. She was wasting away. She was thin as a rake. She had a dull complexion. She twitched convulsively. Her lips and nostrils were sore. She had sores all over. She had blue lines around her gums and blue rings, and complained of stomach pains and a tightness around her neck as though someone was strangling her, and unquenchable thirst. And this went on night and day. It went on for nearly 2 months. Her main doctor was a man called Dr. Pat McIntyre, who was a great mate of Tom Hall's. But various other doctors were called in, Timaru doctors, another three Timaru doctors. A doctor was brought up from Dunedin, and Tom was saying, "You've got to do everything. You've got to find out what's going on. I'll do anything if you. I don't mind what I pay. I just want to make sure that Kitty recovers." And he would sit by her bed for hours on end, stroking her hand and looking into her eyes, and in a loving sort of way. And I think that's one of the things that people who've looked at this case think is just so disgusting, that he was able to inflict this terrible torture on his wife and sit there pretending to be sympathetic. Anyway, this went on for nearly 2 months. The doctor didn't seem to have a clue what was going on, but eventually, after about 2 months, somebody took a sample of vomit and urine from Kitty, and they had that tested, and they found traces of antimony. And of course, it was staring them in the face that this was a case of poisoning. It really could not have been anything else, I don't think. But then they had a good idea. It was antimony was the poison. And then we get to not long before the arrest. Kitty was under strict orders only to take food from the or nourishment, wasn't really beyond taking food, from Nurse Allison. And then one day, the day before the arrest, Nurse Allison gave her some water that had a nasty taste, and Kitty didn't like it. And Nurse Allison took a little sample and set it aside. Then Tom and Meg, that was Margaret Houston, came into the room, and they said, "Oh, this water doesn't taste good." And then Meg says, "Oh, well, if it doesn't taste nice, you can't, you won't have it." And then she took the cup outside and threw it out into the garden and threw away a piece of gauze that had been on top of it and probably would have had traces of the poison. And later that afternoon, that sample, that little teaspoonful of liquid that Nurse Allison had kept, was taken to the local chemist shop and given a sort of a field testing, and again found to be antimony. And by this stage, Pat McIntyre, the doctor, finally woke up and went down to the police and swore an information that resulted in the arrest of Tom. And when they went to arrest him, there was a great struggle, and Tom was trying to throw a little bottle he had in his pocket into the fire, and Meg Houston sort of came to the rescue and tried to sort of defend him. And anyway, it was found that he was carrying around in his pockets this substance, and Tom was put under arrest. And Meg Houston was acting in such a very strange way that, to my mind, it's entirely understandable that she was arrested as well.
Tell me a bit about the trial when it happened.
There was a trial in Christchurch, and Tom was convicted of attempted murder in 8 minutes, and Meg was acquitted, and there was a rider verdict that she left the court without a stain on her character, and I think what scuttled the Crown's case was medical evidence that had been taken. She'd been examined by a doctor who found that she had all the evidences of virginity were present, and that was enough really to demolish the prosecution case. I argue that while I don't think there was enough evidence against her really to result in a conviction, I certainly don't think she left without a stain on her character, and I think there was very considerable suspicion. There was a second trial when they dug up the corpse of Captain Kane. The father-in-law from a few months earlier. And they found antimony in his system. Tom was put on trial this time for murder. And he was convicted of murder, but the judge referred a point of law to the Court of Appeal, and the Court of Appeal, at that trial, evidence had been admitted of the case involving Kitty, and that was enough to overturn the conviction. So at the end, Tom didn't hang. Tom walked a free man. He took himself off to Australia, and he lived after serving 21 years in Mount Eden prison for the attempted poisoning case.
Kitty refused to believe he'd do it. In fact, although she eventually divorced him, actually left him some money in her will.
She paid him an allowance in her will. And actually, he was also paid a small allowance by Sir John Hall on condition that he stayed out of New Zealand. And of course, that's the first known case of a... There were plenty of people paid remittances to live in New Zealand, but he's the first one I've heard of somebody who paid not to live in New Zealand.
You've been listening to Crimes NZ, hosted by me, Jesse Mulligan, and this is the last episode of the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If this is the first episode you've come across, go back and have a listen to our earlier eps. From mysterious disappearances to robberies gone wrong, we've covered most of New Zealand's most well-known crimes. All the episodes are available on the RNZ website, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and iHeartRadio, basically anywhere you find your podcasts. And I'm not going anywhere. You can still catch me each weekday on the afternoon show here on RNZ National.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.